Meow.
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 Woof, woof, woof.
Meow, meow.
Estos son los Freedom Fiends, transmitiendo desde Pod Bay 2A a un kilómetro de altura sobre el nivel del mar en los estudios intergalácticos de La Paradera. Alteramos tu locus cerúleo calentando tus sinapsis con rejuvenecedoras ondas de radio. Esto calienta tu cerebro unos sabrosos y tostaditos 365 grados, manteniendo la avalancha de estatismo fuera de tu cabeza. ¿Lo sienten? ¿Funciona? ¿Lo sienten? You say sí, please.
Sí.
Sí.
Sí. I don't know,
y quiero recordarles que los Freedom Fiends están cubiertos por una licencia BIPCOT No Government. Permite que todo el mundo, excepto los gobiernos, lo utilicen. Everybody except for governments. And we have a Fiends Bonanza.
Worms. Today. How do you say worms in Spanish?
Lombrices.
Lombrices. You know, the,
like the earthworms. Lombrices. Okay.
Gusano Rojo.
It's all Greek to me, man.
Gusano Rojo. Well,
Gusano Rojo, red worm.
Yes.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, so, I think it winds up in the tequila bottle.
Yeah, that's a really good worm to think of when you say worms. So we have, there's a bunch of fiends today, right?
Yes, sir.
There are.
We have Davin, we have Nick and Lou and Diana. Am I missing anyone?
Not just Diana, but new Diana.
New Diana.
Yeah.
Say hi, Diana.
Oh, right. Yeah, because you got another Diana, right?
Yes. Tell us about you and why we should subscribe to your newsletter.
To my YouTube channel?
Well, okay. I mean, if you're not using a newsletter, I guess a YouTube channel would work. But anyway, yeah, tell us about yourself.
Well, it's kind of dangerous. You know, I was on a 20-second delay on this show for a long time because YouTube is a harsh place, man. I've spent the last month being called every name in the book. You got to be really tough to go on YouTube.
So what do you talk about? What's your shtick?
Well, I started out talking mostly about gender issues. You know, my game is that I just like to call out liars and frauds, and that ended up getting me in conflict with feminists. And I'm kind of branching out a little bit because, well, the reason I ended up on Fiend Phones is mostly a video or two that I did on Stephen Molyneux. And, you know, Molyneux is fairly well known to the anarchy community. And actually,
was it a praise video?
Oh, yeah, it's praise. it's praise for, you know, bullcrap, right? So. It's a really big problem, actually, that, you know, there's a lot of good ideas flying around. There's a lot of intelligent people who, you know, what I like about YouTube is it gives a voice to the average person. So you don't have to have a lot of financing. You don't have to have a political party. You can go on YouTube and start a channel. Anybody can do it, right? And you never know. Like, I don't think when Molyneux started his channel that he knew that he was going to get the attention he did. And how he responded to the attention is kind of what turned him into what's being called a cult, right? But what I find really interesting about him in terms of anarchy is, like, if you look at the community he's created for himself, he's got his own website, not just the YouTube, you know, channel that he runs. When you look at his community that he set up, it's a monarchy, really. So, you know, he talks about
he's anarchy. A philosopher king.
Mm-hmm. And all you have to do to become a philosopher king on his site is to donate money to him, and you get the actual title under your name on the form of philosopher king, right?
Yeah, so they're not like really Pope kings, though. They're like board members or
they're hall
councilmen
monitors.
Or they're hall monitors. That's right.
That's what it ends up being. There is a really interesting thread on the forum on his site that was documented on, I don't know, FDR Liberated, I think it was, where a woman came on and she asked a legitimate question about one of the things in his book to do with male-female relations and presented some serious problems in his logic. And his ultimate rebuttal to her was to say, well, my problem with your question is that you didn't ask why I said it. You came in asking a question as if I made a mistake.
Oh, did she give her answer? Did she forget to give her answer in the form of a question? Is that what happened?
Yeah. Well,
she came in. That was her first mistake. She thought that he could be legitimately questioned, and that's not what goes on over there.
It was a really big thread because it caused a massive division, and a bunch of people dropped out of the forum who were pretty, high level forum users. And his point of view, Molyneux, and he did a video, which wasn't exactly a rebuttal, he didn't actually address any of her concerns, was to say that, look, if you approach me with a problem, it should be phrased in a certain way where you are basically just telling me that you need more clarification. Because, of course, Molyneux can't say anything wrong.
And, bless me, Father, for I do not understand.
Yeah.
Something like that.
But when I first started watching Molyneux's channel, I actually appreciated the stuff that he was saying about anarchy, because anarchy to most people just means chaos, right? It means unruliness and, people shooting each other in the streets and basically a loss of civilization. That's what most people, I think,
dogs and cats sleeping together.
Anarchy. I know. And so I listened to a couple of his presentations on anarchy, and I thought, wow, this guy's making it accessible to people in a way that they can actually imagine a society could use some of these principles. Of course, anarchy isn't just one thing. It's not like one form of anarchy out there. There's different ways of implementing it, which actually somehow miraculously includes socialism in it, right? There's a version of anarchy that's a socialist version of anarchy.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think that's the mutualism. One that Noam Chomsky is, is in more support of, a socialist. And he believes that you need to build in, some sort of social enforcement so that people take care of each other. But he still thinks that anarchy is the better system.
So it's not really anarchy when you have the enforcement of it. But anyway, you mentioned that you talk about gender issues and you've been labeled the anti-feminist. Give us a little clarification on that, because a lot of times when people hear feminism, they immediately assume psycho, feminazi, crazy person, stuff like that. So what do you cover as far as the gender issues and talk about being the anti-feminist?
Well, I wouldn't say that I'm the anti-feminist. And there's many anti-feminists out there, and there's been lots of major conflicts between feminism and other communities. So, like the atheism community, right? They split into atheism and atheism plus, and the plus is atheism plus feminism, right? And there's like different waves of feminism. So you have the and they battle between themselves, right? You don't. There's a lot of the attacks that go on towards feminists are actually from other feminists. You've got the sex positive, the sex negative. So like Andrea Dworkin, Catherine McKinnon, they're the anti-porn, anti-sex, basically saying all PIV is rape, right? Well, PIV being penis and vagina. I think we're allowed to say that, right?
Okay.
Yes,
we're being clinical here.
Technical.
It's not a purian interest. We're just, using the anatomical terms.
That's an actual phrase that they use, PIV, is a description of sex. And so they battle it out with some of the more modern feminists who are, staging these slut walks and things like that, right?
They really are jargony, aren't they? Like being cisgendered and being whatever. I can't keep up with all the terminology.
Well, it goes in with the, politically correct issue. And now political correctness has had its own battles for a long time too, and one of the biggest complainers about the whole PC language issue, it's really funny how people think that if you eliminate a word, that you eliminate the concept behind the word. So if you ban a word from the dictionary, somehow people won't ever think it. It's really bizarre.
That's happening with the word two words, mental retardation. A lot of people in the mental health field, they want to flush that word down the memory hole. And a lot of the social justice warrior types stand behind that. Doug Stanhope did a really good bit on this when he was in concert here in Detroit. He says, it doesn't matter what you change the word to. When we're talking about retarded people, not the actual mentally retarded, but people doing stupid stuff. If you change the word to something, 10 words long, then that's just what we're going to call people that do really stupid stuff. So I find it a little bit crazy to try and flush the words down the memory hole and you know, think that, well, everybody's going to behave because we have made a decree and this is no longer acceptable. And nobody pays attention to decrees for the most part. But
well, anyway. The other thing I don't get about that whole issue is, where does the word go from being a legitimate word to being an illegitimate word? Because to retard something meant something before it meant to be mentally retarded. Like, you have the adjective mentally because you're saying something about a general term. Like, to retard the development of something could apply to anything.
Yeah, and there's the euphemism slow, which means exactly the same thing, but it's never used as a, you know, that guy's a little slow, he's retarded.
Yeah, that's why those slow children at play signs are so funny.
Retarded is a perfectly good word in the English dictionary.
Yeah.
It's descriptive, right?
And then how do they decide which words to ban and which words to reclaim?
Well, this is the thing, is it doesn't matter what you call something. If it's something that is socially not desired, right? People generally don't want to be mentally slow. They don't want to be handicapped in some way. So whatever it is you're trying to describe, the whatever word you're using at the time will become a bad word in the future. So they just have to keep coming up with new words. And it's happening so fast that even the advocates or allies of these groups can't keep up with their own terminology. It's really funny. When you watch the journalism on it, journalists who are allies of a movement or of a specific, you know, underprivileged group, they'll get called out by members of that group for using words that they shouldn't have.
I object to the term ally out of respect for descendants of the Axis powers.
Obviously, you're on the Axis of evil.
It all comes down to the concept of being offended and believing that is a thing. You know, being offended gives you, entitles you to something, to have people change their behavior.
And it's really amazing, because there are a lot of people out there that just absolutely positively go out of their way to get offended over something stupid, minor, simple. The social justice warrior, cultural Marxism stuff. I mean, it's really baffling. You know, for the reasons that have been discussed already, but there's just so darn many more, and it's painful to talk about them.
Well, that's our culture now, is the negative attention culture. So the more oppressed you are, then the more interest you get on Twitter, right? That's what they want, in their 5 minutes of fame.
There you go.
Anyway, Diana, welcome to the Freedom Fiends, and we'll be back with more non-social justice warrior stuff after this trip to the market.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
New Hampshire is under quarantine as walking corpses devour the flesh of the living. Max is 11 years old and surviving alone. Slow-moving and non-thinking, the dead swarm his home. Now he must apply his Porcupine Freedom Scouts training to improvise his escape. Look for Survivor Max on Facebook, read reviews on Amazon, or read Chapter 1 at SurvivorMax.com.
This is the Freedom Fiend.
Meow!
And we are playing Musical Fiend Phones tonight, and people are popping back in. I see Hugo is back. It looks like Nick is back. Nick, you've been pretty quiet. Say something.
Well, hey, I'm here and I'm back. I don't know what happened there on Fiend Phone, but we're all good now. Not much going on here. We finally get to smoke in the streets. We get to smoke marijuana in the streets here in Oregon today. Finally,
you have permission?
Yeah, we have permission.
Are we doing better?
The cops aren't busting anybody anymore.
Welcome back, Diana. So tell us about this, Nick. Let's hear about the hazy shade of yak smoke over Oregon.
Yeah, so instead of the meth from being cooked down the road, we're actually seeing some marijuana fog. And that's much something healthier. That I'm not too excited about, honestly. I mean, we asked for permission, and it's being taxed a whole lot. And I don't see too much of a change going on. I think that people didn't really care whether the state was letting us ingest cannabis or not. And I really haven't seen much of a difference. I haven't gone into town today, so I don't really know. But not much seems to be changing, honestly, since we've legalized marijuana.
What do you think? What do you think will happen with your friends that are underage? Are they? I reckon they're probably consuming some of the marijuanas, and will they consume less or more of that reefer cigarettes?
I have no idea. I would guess more. I don't know a whole lot of people. My school is very small. We're out in the backwoods, so we don't see really anybody using illegal drugs. But
so it's more of a meth area, being in the backwoods?
Uh-huh. It really is. I live near a city called Fall City, and that's where I've seen most of the illicit drug usage, because we do some co-op with sports over there, and you do see some usage. Not a whole lot of meth anymore. I think Oregon's got better on that, but I mean, marijuana is a very popular drug, and I do think that the usage will go up, but I don't see it as much, honestly.
I don't see it really shooting up a whole lot either. Reason being is when you look at government declarations, dictates, edicts, orders, commands, and other, you know, forms of "you better do what I think is right." People have a tendency to really not listen. There's a lot of status to say, "Well, I don't do it because it's the law." And strangely enough, I don't think that if it was legalized, they would, you know, start smoking weed, or they would start shooting heroin, or start doing whatever it is that's prohibited. I think they use that it's against the law as an excuse. But when you look at, you know, the varying degrees, traffic laws, most people just blatantly disobey traffic laws all day, every day. They go over the speed limit. They make turns on red, you know, things like that.
As long as they can get away with it.
Yeah. Well, they really don't care. And, you know, when you look at cannabis use, you know, cannabis use is very high for something that is completely prohibited and, you know, punishable by going to jail, getting beat up, pepper sprayed, tased, you know, whatever. But when you get up into the larger degrees, you know, when you get into theft, murder, rape, those things are all very, very rare in the big scheme of things. The number of people that are willing to commit murder or do commit murder is extremely small in comparison to the number of people that are willing to and do use cannabis or some of the harder stuff. So I don't believe that laws actually get people to not do anything. And two, I think people are going to follow their own moral compass regardless of what government says, which would probably be a good thing if they did, because government, as far as a moral compass, points due south.
Well, I live in BC in Canada, and BC is known for its pot, right? It's hard to live in BC and not have most of your friends, you know, partake in that particular crime. And they made it, you know, it was said that they made it legal, but they didn't actually. What they did was make it so that they weren't going to prosecute unless it was a serious level. So on the day that this whole thing kicked in, where marijuana was supposedly legal, everyone was walking around the streets going, yeah, all right, smoking, you know, a doob or whatever, right, as they walked down the street. But the reality is that they just changed what the level of arrest was. So unless you have enough on your person that they could say that you were dealing it, they wouldn't arrest you. But if you had enough that you were dealing it in their minds, then you're still going to get prosecuted.
It's just a funding scheme for them.
Well, they're trying to, you know, ease it up on the court systems. They weren't actually making a statement about legality.
More freedom fiends decriminalized after this trip to the market.
Worms.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, this is Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to The Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. By sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Yo!
Meow! This is the Freedom Fiends, and we're coming back here talking about the legalization of marijuana here in Oregon, where I'm at. And we were talking about over the break that that we wanted to get into some of the debating about harder drugs and how, you know, we can deal with that in more of a stateless society. So what are you guys' thought on that?
Before we jump into that, Nick, I do have a question for you. Back when I was in high school, back in the old days, I would say probably at least a quarter of the people in my school, and I think my graduating class was about, I don't know, 300-400, something like that. A lot of kids in there. I would say that probably a quarter of the kids used cannabis at least somewhat. I mean, there were some that were, you know, just recreational users. There were some that were regular users, for that matter. What do you think the youth cannabis usage rate is, like in your school or in your area?
At my school, nobody that I know of. It's such a small school. I mean, you know, I guess I wouldn't be surprised if somebody was, but they keep it hidden. We have a very, very conservative area here in rural Oregon. But definitely in the nearby towns, it's common enough. I know people who do in other schools and in other towns. I don't know enough people to say like a specific number or to even guess, but it's not uncommon.
Okay.
Don't you think that when you have a law against something, especially for youth, it makes it more appealing to them?
Totally.
Definitely. So, all right. So what about like harder stuff in your area? Not necessarily your school, but like in the surrounding area. Because one of the things, crack was brand new, and there wasn't anybody messing with crack in my school. There was a little bit of cocaine. I don't know about heroin, but the different psychedelics were pretty popular, the mescaline and acid. And me personally, they're talking about, you know, dropping acid at school, walking down the hall, seeing the floor or the hallway open up and you know, fire coming out and dragons, all this other stuff. I'm like, yeah, forget about that. But anyway, what about stuff like that, you know, like the psychedelics?
One thing that's, I mean, it's Oregon. We have so many hippies. It's the green state for a few reasons, right? Pacific Northwest is amazing for growing mushrooms. We get a lot of psilocybin and there are a lot of people using it. I know people who go out here and, you know, where I live, and go out in the fall and look for the mushrooms in the cow fields all the time, and people do it. So that's definitely popular. Oregon's pretty infamous for its high usage of methamphetamines. I've had a couple houses down here in my little neighborhood where people were busted for cooking. In the nearby towns, it's you don't see too many tweakers walking around, but in some of them, you can definitely spot them. I think the usage of meth has gone down quite a bit in the recent years for whatever reason. But meth is definitely, it's something that, you definitely do see people walking around who you can just tell that they're tweaking.
Okay.
But, in terms of the war on drugs, though, like this narrative that drugs are bad, right? This is your mind. This is your mind on drugs. I don't really think that's very effective, because the reality is that if drugs were bad, if every single thing that happened to you when once you partook of a drug was a bad thing, people wouldn't do them, right? So I think that the problem is that people don't talk to each other on legitimate basis. So like with my kid, I said to her, the problem with drugs is that they're really good, but then once it wears off, you feel really, really bad. And if you're honest with people, instead of just putting these blanket terms like this is evil and this is good, right? And you talk about the effects of things, like you'll have a really interesting experience, but then this is going to be how you feel afterwards. And this is, you know, the compulsion, like you're going to feel the need to do it again and again. And you're going to forget that you can be a creative person without the use of that drug. You're going to forget that you can be happy without the use of that drug, right? That's a legitimate conversation.
Nick, as far as
drugs, that's just outrageous terms to put to youth who want to find out about things. They want to explore things, right?
Nick, as far as like the anti-drug messages that are going around now in the schools, or maybe that you've gotten from your parents while your father's the administrator for your school, what's some of the propaganda that they put out now about cannabis use and then the harder stuff?
I actually don't see like any propaganda about drugs very often, especially in our little school. It's kind of interesting. The only thing, you know, maybe in health class, we did talk about illegal drugs, and the teacher told us his opinions that marijuana was a gateway drug, and we have talked about the effects on teenage brains with the use of marijuana. I think that at this stage in our, you know, in high school, I think they actually kind of trust us to know that that, you know, drugs aren't such a fantastic way to go. And, you know, we didn't really talk a whole lot about drugs at all. And my dad, I mean, the dude grew up in the 80s. We can only suspect. I don't know what, you know, anything about that, but I'm just making fun of him.
Well, it's likely that
he partook once.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. He went to OSU, Oregon, in the 80s. But I'm just teasing him. I haven't gotten a whole lot of talk about that. I think that, you know, we just don't talk about it. I guess not really even in school or at home.
You know, it's kind of, I would say not talking about those things can be dangerous. I grew up in a smaller city in Venezuela, so it was never in a conversation. It wasn't discussed in school, and I, how could I say, I didn't turn out bad, but I can see a situation where it could have gone wrong. You know, if I didn't know much about drugs, probably the pusher would have been my first piece of information about that kind of drug. You know, it's okay, it's gonna be good, and I wouldn't, that could have gone wrong. That's what I'm saying. It's you gotta speak about drugs, you gotta talk about that. And I don't know if between among your peers, but at least with a parent or someone at school, that's the problem, where people at school are so biased and telling simplistic information, like, you know, the gateway drug thing.
But the gateway of, you know, it's a gateway drug. The problem there is that you're talking like the drug is doing this thing, and it's not. It's the people selling it. So it's that the people selling marijuana are then going to try and lure you into doing other drugs. It's not that marijuana itself will lead to heroin, right?
I'm going to jump in here. It's not necessarily that the people selling it are trying to get you to upgrade. I work with many patients that have substance abuse issues, long-term histories of substance abuse. And a number of the people that I met that have had problems with crack and heroin, they started out with marijuana or cannabis. And the reason that they tried something else was because there would be a large marijuana bust in their area, so the supply would dry up.
And oh, sure.
And the dealer would say, well, yeah, we don't have any weed because the cops, you know, got one of our 1 million shipments. But I do have this here if you're looking to try. And it's the elimination of the supply of the cannabis, you know, the lower powered stuff, And the fact is they want to get high, that they're willing to try something else. Most people do not start out with crack, and they don't progress to crack because cannabis just wasn't doing it for them.
That would happen all the time in Santa Cruz. That there, when I used to live in Santa Cruz, and there would be like dry spells for various reasons. Sometimes it was a bust, but like often it was also just like the grow season was off, and then there would be sort of a flush of other things.
Yeah, but I mean, it's very few people actually start out using, you know, crack, heroin, cocaine, all that other stuff. They wind up there because of a shortage, like Dobby said, you know, growing season or a bust. And there are going to be some people that maybe they're just predetermined to use the harder stuff or want to, you know, knock themselves out in such a manner. But one thing, Diana brought this up. What was it? Oh, yeah, the propaganda. One of the things, my mother was not good at talking directly about cannabis and stuff like that. And one of her lines was, well, if you use cannabis, you'll never be able to learn another thing ever again, not once. And when I saw that, what? Yeah, well, that's what a lot of this propaganda is. You know, they come up with the most outrageous lies. Christians for Michelle Bachman, it's a troll Facebook page, and they put all this ridiculous stuff on there. You know, how marijuanas will make you gay if you inject them and everything else. But it's the same mentality, except it's not trolling. So when I saw that friends at school were using cannabis and they weren't having the mental deficiencies they were able to keep on learning, I'm like, okay, all right, my mom just completely lied to me. She's full of bunk, so why should I even listen to her on this stuff? And if I were a type of person that was comfortable with using the psychedelics, which I am not in any way, shape, or form, but if I were comfortable with that sort of thing, I would have progressed on, because, you know, if she told me that it does this, that, and the other thing, I'd have been like, okay, yeah, right, you're just blowing smoke. So, well, Nick.
One of the questions, though, is not what do drugs do to you, but do drug laws actually deter drug use? That's, you know, one of the questions that I think is more important.
That's a very good question. And if government can't keep drugs out of schools and prisons, but I repeat myself, how are they supposed to keep them off the street? Because what is more government than a school or a prison?
Yeah. Well,
A gas chamber?
A concentration camp? Gulag, mass grave, killing fields?
Pretty mass, sure they mass have grave, yeah, Siberia. I think that's the most government. I think that's peak government is mass graves.
One of the things I found interesting about the school system was when my kid decided, well, she informed me that stupid was the worst word in the English language you could use. It was the biggest, you know, insult to somebody's person. It was like on the scale of the words we're not allowed to say on the radio.
What if stupid. They are stupid?
Yeah, but what if they are stupid? What word are you supposed to use to describe that?
Intellectually challenged.
Intellectually disadvantaged.
There's a really interesting article on, I'm a big fan of a site called Spiked Online. There's a really interesting article actually about the request of teachers to start monitoring their students. And, well, actually, no, it's bigger than that. But putting teachers.
And when we come back from this trip to the
changing
market.
Changing the mentality of the public through the teaching of students at a young age.
This is what radio sounds like now.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 3rd Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan from August 7th through the 10th. There will be vending, discussions, presentations, all sorts of activities for children and adults, and bacon, lots of bacon. Round up your friends and family and get them registered today at miplc.org. That's miplc.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
And welcome back to the Freedom Fiends. Oh yeah. Hey, this is Lou. I am joined by Hugo down in Mexico City, Diana in British Columbia, Davi in San Francisco, California.
The Soviet Socialist Republic of California.
And young Nick Hazelton in smoky green Oregon. So, anyway, yeah, the war on drugs. Failure or massive success? What say you, Nick?
It depends what the objectives are.
Okay, Davi, roll with that.
Well, I mean, like, if the point is to incarcerate peaceful people and generate revenue for the state, then I would say that it's a colossal success. If the point is to keep pharmaceutical companies making money off of things that are, you know, medicines that grow in your garden, then I would also say it was a colossal success. If the point is public health, then to utter failure.
Well, you also forget creating jobs for morticians and coroners doing autopsies and stuff like that because of all the violence that goes along with it.
Yeah, that's true. It's also employed a lot of sort of like statist, like camera crews and little commercial film directors for the little propaganda videos. Like, those guys need jobs too.
You know, if it wasn't for the war on drugs, I doubt the TV show Cops would exist and the world would be better.
There you go.
Yeah, there's Diana. A lot of money.
Isn't
for...
Isn't it weird how people love watching other people get arrested? It's the same thing with, like, the judging shows and stuff. People love watching other people get in trouble.
Oh, it's horrible. Is weird.
It's a part it's of horrible. Our society. We have to accept this, and we have to figure out what to do with it.
Okay, so what do we do with it? Give us some ideas. Nick, as the voice of the young generation here on The Fiends... How do you keep the kids from taking the weeds and stuff like that?
Well, I speak for every young person in America.
Just why we're so glad to have you here.
Yeah, so I don't think you really can. Like, I mean, no, yeah, there's just no way. It's nearly impossible. I think you'd have to educate people to the point where you know, they understand that drug usage is not healthy. But even then, I don't, you know...
Except when it is.
Right. Yeah, that's the point. It's, well, you gotta give it some room. People will want to try, and maybe they become responsible consumers of, I don't know, weed or some other drug. And they can, you know, smoke the occasional doobie every day or every week and lead productive lives and work and everything. That's part of it. We don't have to keep people from using.
Well, yeah. I think one of the problems is that will take care, you know, of
people look at the younger generation as something they have to mold and shape, where in reality, civilization, I think, progresses when you encourage the younger generation to not be molded. You encourage them to explore things and to contribute and to turn it into their world. So the older generation wants to keep things static. They want to keep things safe and you know, convenient for themselves. But society as a whole, I think, improves when you encourage young people to not be bound by rules and regulations and conformity to the previous generation. Yeah?
That's an excellent point, Diana. The moldy generation wants to mold the younger generation. And it was really crazy is it's the younger generation that is more in tune with the modern things that go on. Like John McCain brags about not using email. Can you imagine him taking part in internet policy through government without even using email and without using the internet and all that other stuff? How's he supposed to effectively apply his knowledge? You know, because as a elder statesman in that regard, you're supposed to be the knowledgeable one. You're supposed to be the one with all the experience and everything else. And he doesn't even use freaking email. He probably doesn't even have a BlackBerry. Which, by the way, I like BlackBerries because they're excellent work phones. But that's a side note. So how's this older generation that's not in tune with modern technology or modern information supposed to do these things?
I think that ties into something I was starting to say at the end, which is the turning universities into daycare centers and, you know, That's kind of been a trend lately, right? Where universities used to be for dangerous thinkers. They used to encourage unique thinking and going outside the box. And it was a place where people could say things that were really controversial, and it would be assessed on an intellectual level of merit, not based on political correctness or what the older generation thought was a desirable direction to make themselves comfortable. Society's not about being comfortable, it's about progressing, yeah?
Oh, yes, definitely. And we will progress into the second hour, and you can drop your kids off at the Freedom Fiends Daycare. We will fill their heads with all sorts of great information that they can use and be free thinkers.
Worms.
Meow.
My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, "You didn't build that"? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Meow.
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 Woof, woof.
Dígame. Estos son los Freedom Fiends. Y no tengo la introducción en este momento, pero de todas maneras estamos transmitiendo desde el Centro Libertario de Readoctrinamiento. Los Freedom Fiends están cubiertos por una licencia NoGov, de no gobierno, que permite que cualquier persona lo utilice, excepto por los gobiernos. So there's no government people here. And we're back, and we were talking about how universities are like daycare centers for
sandboxes for the mind.
yeah. You know, you
litter boxes.
You can scrape a knee, or in your little brain, and get some idea that's problematic for you. So now we have to dump universities down to the point where no new ideas or controversial ideas are entertained. And that's
trigger warnings. They have trigger warnings on course material. So you select a course for yourself, and they have to give you a trigger warning in case you've selected something that might traumatize you.
Please explain trigger warning for anybody out there that is not familiar with that.
Well, the trigger warning is based on the idea that text, especially on the internet, that reading some text might actually cause post-traumatic stress disorder for somebody who has been through an experience being discussed in the text that they're reading. And that goes against all knowledge of what actually will trigger people into... Trigger is you get triggered into a state of post-traumatic stress disorder. Right?
Hmm.
So course material in universities apparently can do this. And we can't trust university students who are apparently adults. We deem them to be adults, but we can't trust them to choose course material appropriate to their own levels of tolerance, or they don't know what they're prepared for.
So that's like, I'm in university, I'm taking an underwater basket weaving class, and I like am reading through the syllabus, and then suddenly I have flashbacks to being assaulted underwater by a basket, and I crawl into a fetal position and sue the university for millions of dollars. Is that how that happens?
Exactly.
Well, when you have PTSD, anything can be a trigger, right?
Yeah, sure, maybe. I don't know.
Usually it's something that you have actual experience with. I think the triggering in the cultural Marxism sense is anything that you think may be offensive to your sensitivities and feels. So, but like real PTSD, I mean, there's actual triggers for, and it's not just being butt hurt.
No. What's going on right now is basically just a minimized version of book burning. So they're saying some topics.
Yeah, we just burn books one word at a time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Hugo, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I was saying that the Marxist part comes into it when they, you know, they don't know you personally, so they have to assume things that could trigger you depending based on your class or based on the, what they assume are your natural triggers. So they're pretty much assuming a lot of things about your about you. And that's where class consciousness and gender consciousness and identity consciousness comes into it.
Okay, so what is the solution to keep people from being triggered? You know, ban words and phrases, kind of like it's done to eliminate drug use?
Let's say tiptoeing around everything.
I think you have to teach people how to survive, right? They love this word survivor, and yet they're so bad at it. They obviously haven't survived anything because they're being triggered all the time, and they're vulnerable and they're weak and they're, you know, susceptible to, you know, being reduced to a puddle of goo over the
Hello? Hello, are you there? Can you hear me?
We have a caller. We have a caller. Caller, yeah, you're on the air.
And this is a first-time caller, long-time listener. And thanks for taking my call, you guys. I appreciate it. And, I noticed you don't take a lot of calls lately, but I'm sorry. I'm really honored that you took my call. You know, I think Rush Limbaugh is usually on this slot on this station. I don't know who you guys are, but I think y'all need to get back to the Constitution, and the only triggering you need is, like, better trigger control on your handguns, because the Second Amendment protects us all. And you got to know that Barack Obama is a liar. He's a socialist, and his feet stink. What do you think of that, you hippies?
I think your audio sounds horrible.
Okay, well, I'm hanging up because I'm too good for y'all. Take care. Bye.
Does anybody think that was Michael?
Yeah, well, he sees you when you're sleeping, when you're talking, when you're doing a radio show.
He's almost like the NSA. He always knows what's going on.
Maybe something we said, I don't know, triggered him.
Now I'm wondering, what would Rush Limbaugh say?
So what do you guys think? Should we get back to the holy scriptures of the secular religion? Is that what we need?
Well, who says that the holy scriptures aren't really being followed? The power to tax, the power to regulate commerce. Let's see now, indefinite detention, I think that would fall under Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2 of the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall be suspended in times of foreign invasion or rebellion.
So, well, I think what it is that it's sort of like the secular religion has like Catholics and Protestants, right? So like the federal government is like the Catholic Church, and they have like their, you know, people in robes that tell you what the scripture says. And then you have your sort of like Protestant Americans who are like, no, we're all allowed to read the Constitution for ourselves and decide what it says. And
but
that's how it goes, right?
But the high priests in robes, they can't even decide they can't even agree what it means, because they're always going 5-4 against each other.
Well, that's just
the church.
That's because the state operates in mysterious ways, Lou.
It is unfathomable. Yes,
it is beyond our comprehension. But anyway,
yeah,
Diana, you used a perfect line, and this should be the title of this episode: "Is Survivors Are Horrible at Surviving."
I know, right?
So. Talk a little bit more about that. Go into a little bit more detail.
Well, one of the things I noticed about the victim culture that's the growing norm in society today, it's all the rage to be a victim of something. And if you haven't got enough victim badges, then you haven't been looking hard enough. One of the problems with them is that instead of helping you to overcome, because I would think that if something bad happens to you, the goal is to move past it in your life and to go about pursuing your goals and to do the best you can to make your life meaningful to yourself. But instead of doing that, what they do is they encourage people to focus on the one bad thing that happened to them and relive that thing over and over and over again. And then they call it surviving, because the freedom to talk about it, the ability to express the bad thing that happened to you and to lay it on society as a problem that society has to deal with for you, is apparently strength. And I don't find that to be strong at all. I think that the best revenge on somebody who is, and usually the people who abuse you are trying to damage you in some way, you're not a survivor if you let them win. And letting them win means that's all you do with your life now, is you focus on this bad thing that happened to you.
One of the things I deal with my work, because I'll deal with folks that have PTSD, other mental health issues, substance abuse, things like that. The big thing, like you said, is the goal is to recover, is to get beyond that and move on with your life. And when you're talking about a situation where people keep staying in that victim status, or they keep their illness, they're not recovering. And one of the things that we have to talk about with them is, it's okay to get better. It's okay to move on. And with this being kept in the victim status, it's anti-recovery. It's like me talking to somebody with a substance abuse problem saying, well, best way for you to recover and be a survivor of heroin use is to keep shooting heroin. And it's literally what it sounds like.
It gets to a point where that's all they know, because, they're being encouraged to dive into it. And they don't have another identity.
There's a lot of satisfaction and attention also received. I was in psychoanalysis for a number of years. Nothing that dramatic, but as an abuse situation. But you derive a certain pleasure. They have a word for that in psychoanalysis. It's called, I think it's called joy or enjoyment, something like that. I don't know how to translate it.
That's so funny you say, I think it's called joy, as if you don't know what joy is.
Joy?
Sorry. I think it's called joy. I'm not sure. I haven't experienced it before.
Well, no. It's an actual term for when you dwell on your problem, when you dwell on your past trauma. And it brings you a certain enjoyment, and that's something you have to accept, and that might take you a long time to understand that you're dwelling there, because it feels like home. So that part of surviving is stopping that enjoyment over your own past trouble and what gives you meaning, and that's a thing. You have to go from there to be able to heal yourself.
For a while, I actually saw it as like a version of hypochondria, but hypochondria, if you look into it, is a little bit different. But I used to think hypochondria was basically people who got pleasure out of thinking they were sick.
That's they have a name. That's Munchausen also,
That's the attention seeking. The Munchausen by proxy, if memory serves me correctly, because I'm not a psychologist, that's where people will take their kids to the doctor, saying that they're ill and they're seeking attention for themselves and not the children.
Or yes, it can be for themselves too. Munchausen syndrome is a really great diagnosis for the social justice warrior. Like, that had never really occurred to me, because it is about I'm the victim of these circumstances, and therefore please dawd over me with sympathy and special treatment and
change the way
attention
you talk around.
And yeah.
Yeah, walk with kid gloves. Show me attention. Be deferential to me.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's driven by this, the meek shall inherit the earth idea, right? So, at some point we decided that, being vulnerable and being a victim and being hurt all the time is going to somehow give you stuff.
Maybe.
It's worked so far because they get all of the funding from the government, right?
Probably. Yeah,
you know, being a victim is much easier than being the aggressor. So sometimes that could be hiding the fact that some people are aggressors.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
This is the Freedom Fiends. Oh, yeah. Hey, this is Lou. I'm joined by Dobby, Hugo, Nick, Diana. Hola. And is there anybody else? Did I miss anybody? Besides, like, the callers that interrupt the show. But anyway. So, yeah. We interrupt all this flap about the flags and the Skittles running across Facebook to bring you this announcement. Greece is Feinstein, I should say. What's going on in Greece? Anyone?
I got to say, I had a social encounter, which for me means an antisocial encounter, in which a guy said, in a very strange manner, I have to send a letter to Greece. And my instant response was, is it bad news about the economy? I can't describe the look on his face. He was like, I'm not quite sure what just happened here. That was about 4 months ago, and oh my, has it ever taken a downturn?
Do they have email in Greece?
I would have sent an email. It's a lot faster.
Yeah, probably cheaper.
I think they use winged shoes over there for messages, right? That's what I've seen in the freezes.
So what's the basic news? Like, so Greece is the first modern economy country to not be able to repay an International Monetary Fund loan, right?
Yeah. It's the first developed country or non-third world country, whatever you want to call it, that has defaulted on its IMF debt. And I believe that negates their bailout program that they've been involved in for about the past 5 years or so. And the pensioners, the retirees over there, are receiving a fraction of their pensions. So all these people that worked, and I'm not sure if it's just government workers or private sector pensions are affected. I'm not even sure if they have a private sector in Greece. But anyway, they're getting shortchanged. They worked all those years expecting that they're going to get the big fat payout, you know, when they get old and can't work anymore, you know, like when they turn 50. And they're shafted. They're not getting what they expected. So.
Well, I'm going to say it's everybody affected, because what I read was that the banks were closed for 3 days and then they opened briefly to pay out some pensions.
They've run out of other people's money.
Yeah,
that's true. They're letting you have the equivalent of $60 a day from the ATM. So that's what you can take out.
Yeah, what was it? There's an article here in Bloomberg Business, and it says on the third day of capital controls, a few dozen pensioners lined up by 7 a.m. at a central Athens branch at the National Bank of Greece an hour before opening time. They were to receive a maximum of 120 euros, $133. Oh, wow. The euro took a hit. But anyway, compared with the average monthly payment of about 600 euros, many left with nothing after the manager said only those with last names starting with the letters A through K would get paid.
What? Why? What?
I have no idea.
They're rationing it, so they couldn't give it out to everybody.
It's alphabetical order privilege right there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of death panels, it's payment panels. They're trying to figure out if these people are eligible to, if it's going to be worthwhile to pay them. But
this is where it pays off to have the name Aaron, A-A-R-O-N.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't know a lot of Greeks. I don't know a lot of Greeks with that, with Aaron for a last name. So, sure, but anyway,
last name based.
So, what else have we seen on Greece? I did see an article saying not just Greece, but there's talk of putting the borders back into the European countries for like a 30-day trial period to keep people from leaving with their money.
Well, there's some element of this as a Canadian that I don't really get, and that's the EU aspect of it. So, you know, there's Greece has joined the EU, and some not every country has, right? Can anyone explain the EU factor to me?
Well, it's the EU was designed to be, you know, to be indivisible, a more perfect union, if you will. That never works. And at some point, the Greeks or the Greek government, I should say, are playing hardball with the rest of the European Union, threatening to leave the EU, and saying it's very serious for us to leave the EU, and asking for more money. So that's what's going on right now. And in a very, what I would consider a very dirty move, after they've spent all the money and after the government's put them into this situation, now they're asking for a plebiscite, for a referendum where the people will get to decide, you know? Right now it's the people's fault.
So they will vote on their own interests.
Yeah, good stuff. They will.
More about this when we come back from this trip to the market.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Yo!
Meow!
Meow!
Woof.
This is the Freedom Fiends, and we're back. We're talking about Greece, and I'm reading this article from SpikedOnline.com about why the Kalispera. Greeks should embrace a Euro exit. And this article is talking about how the elites of a lot of people in Greece are not favoring the idea that Greece could try and do this on their own without the help of the European Union. There are a lot of powers pushing to really fall back on the EU and to focus on getting help from them rather than seceding the right word, I'm not sure, but definitely trying to get out and stick it out on their own, which is an interesting idea, trying to be more sovereign in solving their own economic issues. I don't know exactly how I feel about the Greece's situation. I think they kind of screwed themselves, and it doesn't really affect me here at home, so I'm not worried about this.
It will.
They kind of did, but the way I look at it is, you know, you don't really have a choice when the government's handing out free money. The only thing you can do is kind of take it and then hope for things to go south. You cannot really expect to refuse the free money or resources from the government, since they will charge you for it later on. You don't really have a choice.
One of the things, Nick, and this is going to affect us here in America eventually, in Diana up in Canada, is that economies are intertwined. And when you look at these different currencies, what you have is a problem of central banking. Now, strangely enough, the dollar did not have like a massive jump in value because of what's going on here, and also what's going on in Indonesia, which we will be talking about in a little bit. This is a problem that could come home to the USSA, particularly with $18 trillion plus dollars in acknowledged debt, not to mention the unfunded liabilities that are out there also. So
does this mean a sooner collapse of the American state?
It'll probably happen in Europe first, but and it's not just Greece. The pigs nations, Portugal, Italy, I believe Ireland,
Spain,
Greece, and Spain. Yeah, they're all sucking wind. France is having a lot of problems. As a matter of fact, there's not only is there talk of a Grexit, but there's also talk of a Frexit from the European Union, or at least the common currency of the euro.
Well, don't you think like economic collapse is one of the things, especially in the conspiracy world of people like Alex Jones or whatever, that's like it's all going to go down because there's going to be economic collapse. Now, Greece wouldn't. I'm kind of keen to see what happens because they're in a literal economic collapse, not just a potential futuristic one.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing about that is it's not necessarily an economic collapse. It's a currency collapse in many cases. But the thing is, the crops that are growing in the field right now and the cattle and all that other stuff, those aren't going to just disappear. They're still going to be there. Houses aren't going to disappear. Factories aren't going to disappear. It's going to be, a lot of it is going to be currency problems, like devaluation of the currency, meaning that the purchasing power has been greatly reduced through planned inflation. And Indonesia is dealing with that quite heavily right now. But what it really stems from, if you look at the European Union, the purpose of it was to have a single economy, but I believe in a single economy worldwide. The problem with the European Union, and just like the North American Union or this Trans-Pacific Partnership and all this other stuff, and TPP, something that wasn't being talked about while the stars, bars, and Skittles were flying through Facebook and Twitter. The problem with these economic systems is that they are centrally planned. They are centrally controlled by government. Instead of like a local government or a state government or something like that, it's like this big giant centralized government. Now, I'm not saying that the local or the state governments are good, but when you have this big giant massive body trying to control the billions and possibly probably even trillions of transactions that occur every single day, you're going to have a big giant mess up, because that central planning and control is the basis of state socialism. And socialism is not an economic system. It's a management system. It's a management of a dwindling supply of resources, too.
Well, you cannot just decide
where the free market stops. In the case of the European Union, it's a matter of there's the whole of Eastern Europe and some other countries around it, and Asia too, and therefore they introduced a lot of distortions in what could naturally happen and with whom people, countries, and businesses could do business with. For example, you get a Greece, which is not very competitive, but it's in the UE, it's in the EU. I'm sorry, it's in the EU, and then you get an advantage for dealing with Greece when you should probably be dealing with China.
Yeah, and that really symbolizes how free trade does not exist at all. And it's managed trade. It's okay, you're free to trade with these other people that you have permission to trade with, but don't trade with the others. So it really eliminates competition, which causes the prices to go up, quality to go down. The regulatory state that comes out of enforcing these trade agreements steals more liberty, and not to mention subsidizing the cost of all these regulators and other tax eaters. So, yeah, it's a big giant mess up. The European Union is kind of like a Soviet Union, but with private ownership of the means of production in most cases.
One of the problems with the International Monetary Fund is that if you agree to accept a loan from them, you have to also agree to their conditions of the loan. And that essentially means letting them take control of your country. So you can't hire public servants, and that includes doctors and things like that. So decades ago, I remember listening to somebody speaking who was in Africa at the time, and an IMF fund was in place with the country he was living in, and they had a major problem with health, but they couldn't hire doctors because the IMF wouldn't allow it. You can't increase public spending. You have to follow their rules. And the IMF actually, outside of just that instance, and in Greece is included in this policy, you have to pretty much give control of your country's economics over to the IMF, which is being run from a remote location. And so you're no longer in control of taking care of your own people. And a different article I read was talking about the current situation in Greece, in that the elderly population, the ones who are counting on their pensions, have one point of view as to what should happen in their economy, and the younger population is more keen on, in this actual instance of economic collapse, what can we do to, do something new, like an anarchy-minded base, right? Do we need all of these constructs that are put on us by the International Monetary Fund, by the EU, by all these other outside institutions? This is an opportunity, since we're facing, they're pretty much toast, right? So what have they got to lose? This is a chance for them to implement a system never been seen before.
It is a chance for them to realize, and many probably are, that the government is just not going to take care of them. And people who are 50 and over are already invested in that scenario, and that possibility, and they have given into the system for so many years. For these young people, they say, I remember, I lived in Latin America my whole life, and we understood that the government will not take care of us, I don't know, maybe 30 years ago. So ever since I was a child or a very young person out of high school, I never assumed that I would get a pension. I have to find some way to ensure my future. That's what's probably going through their minds.
Hugo, at what point did you recognize that government is not capable of taking care of people any more than it's capable of keeping people from using cannabis or psychedelics or the harder stuff?
Well, I had the fortune or the misfortune of living through economic crisis. I was probably 7 or 8 when I first understood what a crisis was, and there were 2-digit inflations in Venezuela and in Mexico, which I lived in both countries when I was a child. So I probably don't remember a situation where I thought, "Wow, the government's this really good force that can make everything better." So okay. Yeah, it was.
So how did you learn this lesson and yet it escaped everybody else or the vast majority of people? Because that is something that happens the world over. Everybody has this idea. Everybody has this idea that, oh, well, the government, they tried, but it was, just the people failed because, they didn't follow the plan, and they blame the victim.
I'm not sure why it didn't escape me that realization. Maybe I'm just an actual pessimist, but in this sense, I don't know. When something doesn't work, I try to think it's not gonna work if I tweak it just a little bit. I've seen it in different countries. So
when Americans are pretty soft because they haven't really had a whole lot of adversity. I mean, the 2008 financial crisis really wasn't that horrible at all. I mean, it was really a drop in the bucket compared to what a lot of other countries or people that went through the Great Depression have experienced. There wasn't mass starvation here in 2008, but
people would still be having jobs, which doesn't happen in other countries.
Yeah. Some jobs did go away, but a lot of them were bailed out, so they kept them. And I hate to say this, but they shouldn't have been bailed out, and those jobs should have been destroyed to create space for new jobs. Nick, do you have that article up on Indonesia yet?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. What's going on with Indonesia and their ban on foreign currency payments?
Well, I'm reading this from our Russian Today.com. It's the Central Bank of Indonesia Russia has put into force a complete ban on the use of the U.S. dollar and other foreign currencies in all financial transactions in the country to stop the rupiah free fall. The ban, effective from July 1st today, was first announced by the head of Bank Indonesia, Eko Yulianto, in April. He said that the ban was on any transactions, and I guess we'll be coming back with it on the first of the month.
They won't be able to stop Bitcoin. Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Wake up and smell the freedom. One of the easiest things you can do to help liberty is to torrent Freedom Fiends episodes to help keep them drone-proof. You can set up your home computer to download and share Freedom Fiends archives over BitTorrent. You can even set up scheduling so it only shares while you're asleep or at work. Put your unused computing power to work and help keep the Freedom Fiends around well into the future. Simply go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Torrent Club link and learn how to torrent and share Freedom Fiends archives.
Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
We're back.
This is the Freedom Fiends. Hey, Hugo, I was wondering, if you survived or lived through economic crisis in Venezuela, does that mean that you're triggered by reading about economic crisis in Greece? Like, should all the coverage have trigger warnings for other socialist countries?
Actually, I'm triggered by Venezuelan music, and I just go ahead and stockpile toilet paper. I'm sitting on a pallet right now.
Well, you know, toilet paper probably will be a viable currency if there's ever a total collapse of society, because they won't be making more. So,
yeah, that's the definition.
It's got both utility and scarcity.
And you can,
not durability.
You can't readily split it. You know, it's
salt used to be currency
by the inch.
Yeah, salt used to be currency in toilet.
Yep,
toilet paper is far more comforting.
Yeah, it is very divisible, but the durability on it isn't very good.
Right.
Right.
But funny thing about this Indonesian thing, the currency controls are a response to the devaluation of the currency. I believe it's lost, I think it was like 13% value year to date. So rather than saying, hey, maybe the government in Indonesian central bank should quit destroying the currency, you know, in reduce the money supply and boost the value of it. You know, rather than doing that, they say, well, this stuff is so bad that you're not allowed to use anything else. And that's what legal tender laws are and currency controls.
Yeah, government control has destroyed the currency, and so we need government control to repair the currency.
Right. And going back to the whole cannabis thing, you know, whenever I hear currency controls, I'm just like, LOL. Yeah, go ahead. So, what's the solution? How's the youth going to fix the stuff that the moldy old folks have destroyed? Diana, you were talking about it a little bit earlier.
Yeah, well, one of the articles I read about Greece was talking about how the older population was basically, they're very intent on maintaining the status quo because it's what they know. But in Greece, the younger population is more anarchy prone. They're saying, well, this is our opportunity to create something new, break free from a system, because what if, and that's the same thing in Greece, as far as I'm concerned, is they're in a position of what have we got to lose? See some interesting things happen over there.
Yeah, Bitcoin has really bounced out. There's an article in CNN talking about how folks are transferring over to Bitcoin. And there, I believe there's like a half a dozen stores or businesses in Athens that are accepting it, but that number is supposedly going to start increasing. Have you been following that, Dobby?
I haven't really been following it. I mean, I guess I sort of like expect it as a matter of sort of economic principle, but I am not terribly interested in reading about politics or economics when it's
the Bitcoin part. Mm-hmm.
The good thing about those young people in Greece is they don't have to come up with the solution. It's already there. Mm-hmm. It's been invented and it's called Bitcoin, and they can start readily doing black or gray or white market activities with Bitcoin. Right now, right today, you know, they cannot take money out of an ATM, but they can surely exchange some satoshis.
Sure.
Hugo, having lived through this before.
It's the IMF, though.
All right, Diana's breaking up.
Do we lose Diana? It sounds like
she's breaking up really bad. Hugo, having lived through major economic crisis down in Venezuela and then also dealing with stuff that happens in Mexico, what part does agorism and the black market play into the survival?
Well, I think it's vile. It was in the Soviet Union. It still is. Let's say, for example, right now you cannot get chicken in Venezuela unless you find someone who has chicken. You cannot just go into a store and buy chicken because there is none to be had. It's not on the shelves. It's not available. So, you know, that's what's going to save us all. Just, you want to do business, just go ahead and do business. Don't wait for any kind of permission.
Yeah. Bill Buper brought up a great point last time I was on with him. He mentioned that without the black markets, the Soviet Union and the Eastern Bloc nations, those things would have collapsed long before they actually did. That creeping capitalism that the Soviet government hated so much is the reason that there was much less starvation than there could have been. So rather than saying, you know, we have to get back to the Constitution, no, you need to get back to smuggling, black markets, agorism, gray markets, whatever it is.
Worms.
Because depending upon government or the suicide pact of the EU or the Constitution is not going to work out.
You gotta make your own destiny. Worms.
Invest in Atkins and Bitcoin.
Worms.